You are listening to BensTorah.com.
When you look at the Torah personalities, especially in Sefer Bereishis, we have a principle that is articulated by the Ramban and other Rishonim, and that is Mais Avasim Labanim. What happened to our forefathers when it comes to their life, their interaction with society around them, all that happened to them is going to be a simon for us, that what might we might be confronted with as the Jewish people throughout the centuries of our existence till the end of time. And quite obviously that has served as a very important source for us, that anytime we are faced with any type of crisis, we go to the Chumash, we try to find some type of allusion, some type of remez in the Chumash to events that we're confronting that perhaps were confronted by earlier generations as well. And that has served as not only a guide, but a nechama, and also, quite obviously, a yediya, a piece of information given to us, alluded to by Hashem in the Torah, of what we should do when we're confronted with a problem, how do we deal with it, how do we confront it, and ultimately speaking, how do we resolve the problem. When it comes to the parshas relating to Yaakov, you know, in particular, of all the avos, since Yaakov is the one who brought into existence the Shiftei Kah, the 12 tribes of Klal Yisrael. So therefore, especially, the events that happened to Yaakov, you know, have supreme historical and hashgafic significance to us when it comes to watching what he did and to model ourselves after his reactions to the various crises that confronted him and his mishpacha during his lifetime. The interesting phenomenon when it comes to Yaakov, unlike Avraham and unlike Yitzchak, is, as I'm soon going to show you, there were certain personalities that interacted, intersected with his life. The Chazal point out represent not only those specific personalities in their own right, but represent the attitude of the non-Jewish world towards the Jewish people throughout thousands and thousands of years, once again, till the end of time, when Mashiach comes in those situations and those personalities or nations that espouse those types of anti-Semitic feelings towards the Jews will be eliminated through the help and aegis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After all, Hashem says in Parshas B'Shalach, Mach Emcha Zech Amalek, I will ultimately eradicate the anti-Jewish feelings of the Amalekim of society at the end of time as a prelude to the Emes HaMashiach and to ultimately Olam Haba. Now, the two personalities that we immediately see in our parshas over here that interacted with Yaakov and posed a threat to Yaakov and his mishpacha, the two personalities that I'm thinking about, and quite obviously you should be thinking about as well, are the personality of Esav, and for that matter, even Yishmael. In many respects, I'll show you very shortly how Yishmael and Esav have a similar attitude towards Yaakov Avinu. And then you have the personality of Lavan that Yaakov is going to be confronting in this week's Parsha Shavua, as at the behest of his parents, he goes to that specific household to potentially find a shidduch for himself to get married to one of the mishpacha members of the mishpacha that his mother emanated from. And we therefore see a very interesting relationship and a tremendous intricate relationship that existed between Yaakov and Lavan in that specific setting, which I'll be discussing today as well. I call it a conspiracy of the Esav Yishmael with the Lavans when it comes to what they're trying to do with Yaakov, as is depicted in the Parsha. All of them represent different forms of anti-Semitic behavior towards Yaakov Avinu. At the end of the day, and next week's parsha, you're going to find Vayishlach, the famous Maimer Chazal, Halachi Biduash Esav Sonis Yaakov. It's a tradition we have going back to the oral law and the written law, that Esav will always have some type of animus and hatred towards Yaakov Avinu with an attempt to destroy him. As quite obviously we're going to see very shortly, this feeling on many levels was felt by Yishmael as well, and surely the progeny of Yishmael. The Arab world today, you're able to see it very definitively. And likewise, the loving personalities of society had a certain animus as well, as I'm going to describe in my presentation. So let me get down to the Iker phenomenon I have to first share with you, and then get to the Iker Shir today. Listen very carefully. We know for a fact that, as I mentioned in last week's Parsha, and others that I've discussed in the past, that Rivka Imenu was given a nevuah when she had tremendous birth pangs, which I discussed last week on a specific level. And she went to the Navi of her time, to Shem of Aver, to find out what is the symbolism of this specific unusual pain and anguish she's suffering during her pregnancy. And what basically speaking she was told is that you have twins. Shnei l'umim reichi paredu, two different twins will separate from your loins when they're born. L'omer l'myomotz, there'll be continuous conflict between the children that are born to you, these twins. V'rav yavot tzorir, and ultimately the older child will be subservient to the younger child. Now I pointed out last week the word l'umim is a very, very important technical term. It doesn't just mean a nation, but you're going to have a conflict of two different world philosophies. The philosophy articulated by Esav and those who adhere to his philosophical and theological relationship to the world in which he lives. And the other loom will represent Yaakov and his relationship on a philosophical, theological level to the world in which he lives as well, which, as the Torah tells us, are really polar opposites. I described a lot of the polar opposite phenomena last week, but to say it very bluntly, I don't have to be more explicit than the Chumash is. The Chumash says in last week's Parshin Toldos, Vayigdul Hanarim, when the boys, when Esav and Yaakov grew up and you were able to see the difference in their personality traits, what did you see? What did you notice? The Esav Isha Deatzayit is Sadeh, that Esa was the man of the field, and Yaakov Ishtom Yishevolam, Yaakov was a very contemplative individual. He sat in tents, he studied Torah, he was involved in theological and spiritual connections between himself and the Rabbeinu Shalom. He was the spiritual personality given birth by Rivka, and Esa was the brutal hunter, the person who quite obviously had no problem killing in order to accomplish what he wants to accomplish in this world. He was an Ish, Yodei Tzayit, Isada, and Esav was into tremendous Gashmias and the acquisition of Gashmias and the eradication of Ruchnias. Yaakov was into very, very intensive acquisition of Ruchnias and the minimalization of Gashmias. He did what he did in order to feed his family, to take care of his needs and necessities, but the majority of his time was involved in the concept of the acquisition of Ruchnius and spirituality that would connect him to the Rabbanu Shlom. So you're talking about two polar opposites of two personalities, two brothers born to the same mother and father, each representing two different parts of the spectrum. The fact that the Torah gave a nevuah that Esav, who's the Rav, who's the older one, will be subjugated to the Tzair, to Yaakov, is not really explained in its entirety in that specific part of the Chumash's narrative, but a part of the narrative which I did not mention last week because I wanted to save it for this week is the continuation of that nevuah that was imparted to Esav by none other than his father Yitzchak towards the end of the Parsha, when Yitzchak was giving out the brachos he gave ultimately to Yaakov, the brachos he gave to Esav, he told Esav a very important point, which is going to be a major point in today's discussion. When quite obviously Esav wanted to know what's going to be the situation between me and Yaakov, who's going to be superior, who's going to have the leadership role. So Vayan Yitzchak, Yitzchak said in last week's Pasha, and what did he say? Vayoymer, Hinei Mashmani Oret Yimashavecha, Vital Shmai Meral. I'm also going to give you a bracha vis-a-vis your Gashmias, because obviously you're very into Gashmias. I also wanted you to know, Al Chabecha Tichye, that since you're a hunter, that's going to be the way you earn your panasa, that's going to be a symbol of who you are, Esav. But Esachicha Tavod, you're going to be subservient to your brother. As the nevuah that was given to Rivki Menu, Rav Yavait Sa'ir, Yitzhak repeats it, that you are going to be ultimately subservient to your younger brother, Esachicha Tavod. However, then Yitzchak reveals a very interesting principle and a further continuation of an explanation of the nevuah we saw before. V'hoya kashe torid uferabte ulo mi'altzavarecha. The only way that Rav Yavad Tzor, or that you are going to be subservient to your younger brother, will take place is only on the condition that Yaakov maintains his spiritual status, his spiritual standing. He's a Yoshev Ohalim. He observes the mitzvahs. He observes, Chazal tell us, at least according to Rashi, and according to the Gemaras and Shas, Yaakov, as well as Avraham Yitzchak, observed Kol HaTorah Kula Kedem Shenitna, besides the Zayin mitzvahs that they were commanded to do, and besides the mitzvah of Bris Milah, they observed everything else of the future Torah through Nevuah given to them by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Ramban says in Chumash, and therefore they observed everything as the Eina Mitzvah V'Eisa, Kol HaTorah Kula, the Derises, the Derabbanans, as the Gemara explains in various parts of Shas, the Gemara in Yoma in particular. They had a base Medrash in the house, and they were Marbitz Torah. They learned by themselves continuously. So says Yitzchak to Esav, the only time that you will not be subservient to your younger brother anymore is Tarid, if he undergoes a spiritual decline, a Yerida Ruchanit, as once he basically gives up his spiritual essence, which makes him superior, he will undergo a Yerida, and at that moment in time, Uferak to Ulam al Savarecha, you'll be able to break the yoke he has over you. He will no longer be the sovereign controlling you, the sovereign basically that has the superior hand over you. That situation will stop, and quite obviously you'll be able to get the upper hand. Unfortunately, that also alluded to Esav, another factor, and that is if once he gets the upper hand against Yaakov and God's divine protection of Yaakov is removed because of his spiritual demise, you'll live by the sword now becomes an operative way for him to control Yaakov. And that is why we find that after the discussion that Esav had with his father, the Torah then records that what did Esav think in his mind? Besides the fact that he was very, very unhappy with the situation over here, Vayoma Esav Belibo, Yikrivu Yume Evel Avi, wait till my father dies, my father will be no longer here to prevent me. Ahaga es Yaakov Achi, I will kill my brother Yaakov. So we find over here that Esav already had a plan. My brother could only dominate me as long as he exists in this world. But if I eliminate him through my power, my power of the sword, my power being Yitzayid, Yodei Yitzayid, Yisada, if I kill him, he can't have power over me anymore, neither he or his progeny in the future, by my using all my military kochos against him to annihilate him, to commit genocide if I possibly can. So he already had revealed to us that Esav had a secret plan to kill Yaakov, to eliminate the threat and the sovereignty that Yaakov had over him and was a threat to him. Chazal tell us that Yitzchak and Rivka were very concerned, especially Rivka, about Esav's attitude. Therefore, they sent him away from the house So Esav should not have the physical ability to get a hold of him and to kill him. Unfortunately, Chazal tell us in this week's parasha that when Esav saw what his parents did, he figured out a way perhaps to circumvent what they did, to get away from the block. And what was the idea? He sent his child after Yaakov and told his child, you must kill Yaakov, your uncle. The Chazal tell us that the nephew of Yaakov, Esav's son, couldn't do it because he had a certain love and respect for his uncle. And therefore, he did not implement his father's plan. Yaakov gave him a lot of his goods, his possessions, and told him, Ani chashiv kemes, you can conceptually, if you take all my money and possessions away, I'm like a dead man. But physically, the nephew could not take Yaakov's life. And finally, we find Yaakov ending up in the house of Laban, and the Chumash describes the relationship that this Yaakov had, ultimately speaking, with Laban, his mother's brother, his uncle. And it wasn't an easy relationship. It was a tumultuous relationship from beginning to end. And that's why ultimately, after X amount of years, he left his uncle's abode with his mishpacha to return back to Eretz Israel, to Eretz Canaan. Now, what's interesting, and this you don't see explicitly in the Chumash, but you find this explicated in the Midrashi Chazal. And what they basically say in the Midrashi Chazal is the following phenomenon. Let me basically quote it for you so that you will hear what I have to say and understand what I mean by the statement I just made. So just bear with me one second. I just want to bring out the Midrash Chazal that I'm going to be discussing. The Midrash Chazal tells us that Lavan and Esav were in communication when it came to Yaakov. And Esav and Lavan both desired that this specific Yaakov should somehow cease to exist, not be a threat to them. For Esav, he was a threat when it comes to leadership, when it comes to Parnassa. I mean, the fact of the matter is, we know Esau was involved in the Avodah Zarah as well, but nevertheless, he was the issue, the Yitzhak Yisodah. He's more concerned with material wealth, with leadership, as a soldier, as a leader of military forces, conquering the world, conquering the resources of the world. This was the personality traits of Esau, and if Esau had to get rid of an enemy, his basic methodology was to kill him with the sword if he possibly could, as I just mentioned before. When it came to Lavan, as we will find, when we analyze the Pasha this week, he was very into idolatry. On a very, very deep level, his great teraphim that he used to forecast the future, etc., etc. And his daughters, especially Rachel, were aware of their father's craziness with idolatry and all its theological and spiritual levels. And Lavan realized that Yaakov had a tradition from Yitzhak going back to Avraham of hating as much as they possibly could on any level they possibly could implement. And that is the concept of the ultimate destruction of religiosity, of spirituality, by quite obviously believing in idolatry and worshipping the idols rather than worshipping the Rabbeinu Shalom. Yaakov was opposed to this type of behavior, the same way Avram hated Avodah Zarah and destroyed idols and preached against idolatry. This was also the ideology of Yitzchak, of not wanting any idol worship to take place and to be monotheistic, continuing the traditions of Avram Avinu. They were the pure monotheists. That Messiah was given over to Yaakov. Yaakov was also the pure monotheist, rejecting idolatry. And Lavan was aware of this. And Lavan was concerned about this, because he knew that when it came to idolatry, like Avram, like Yitzchak, anything that, ultimately speaking, Yaakov could do to destroy idolatry on every level, theologically and practically, he would do and try to accomplish as his father and his Zayda did during their historical period of time. Lavi therefore looked upon Yaakov as a threat to his idolatrous beliefs and behavior, and he therefore was the major advocate of converting everybody to idolatry if he possibly could. Of course, he aspired that his daughters and grandchildren would follow in those footsteps. And in fact, he even thought it might even be a possibility, slowly but surely over time, to convert Yaakov to give up monotheism and to, basically speaking, become an idolater as well. The Medrash therefore tells us that when Esav saw that he failed in the destruction of Yaakov Avinu, when it came to killing him through himself or through his child, he communicated, as the Medrash tells us, to his uncle, to Lavan, saying, "Listen, I couldn't kill him physically, but maybe you can kill him spiritually. Because if you kill him spiritually, I already got a prophecy from my father where he was very, very explicit. And that is," he says, "the only time as a chicha tavad I will be subservient to my brother and he'll hold me down is only if he maintains his spiritual excellence. If he undergoes a torid, a spiritual decline, a yiridu ruchanis, uforakt ulam al tzavarecha, the ability for Yaakov and his ideologies to have power over me will cease to exist. I will have sovereignty over him. And the fact of the matter, if that's the case, I couldn't kill him physically, and I failed in doing that. But you, my dear uncle, have an ability, if you can't kill him physically, to kill him spiritually. Because if he's killed spiritually and converts from monotheism to polytheism to idolatry, that is the Yerida Ruchanis that was also alluded to in the Nevuah given to me by my father Yitzchak. That will bring Yaakov down. That will take away the special powers of Hashem's divine supervision of him in this world. Not only he won't be a threat to me anymore, he won't be a threat to you and your idolatrous behavior anymore, because he'll be one of yours, he'll be an idolater like you, and you'll be able to convert the children and everybody else, and therefore the superiority of my world philosophy, believing in idolatry, believing in the power of the sword, believing in the concept of Gashmius, of materialism, as being the most important thing in this world, and that's why we worship the gods of nature, to get more materialism and more materialism and more materialism. Our idolatrous beliefs, that idolatry leads to greater acquisition of materialism, is a combined philosophy. So if I couldn't kill him physically, maybe you can kill him spiritually." And therefore, the secret plan was that Lavan would makabel panim, show him love and concern, marry off his daughters to him, make partnerships with him in business, hoping that slowly but surely he might change the ideology and hashkafa of Yaakov, and especially impact and influence the grandchildren that were born in his home and his daughters. They all should be idolaters. The Yerida Ruchanis of Yaakov would be accomplished. Yaakov would be a spiritual mess. He will literally undergo a decline, and all of a sudden, the greatness and the superiority of Esav and Lavan and all other idolaters and murderers on the face of this earth, who only want conquest as their ultimate accomplishments of the material pleasures of this world, will succeed. And that La'om, that world philosophy, will become the prominent one, the dominant one, based upon this specific plan. The fact of the matter is, the Baal Haggadah that we read on the night of Pesach alludes to Lavan's plan, because it says when it comes to comparing Lavan to Paro and to other anti-Semites in this world, where Paro and other anti-Semites in this world tried to kill us by the sword, and by Paro, he limited to killing the men, not killing the women. He hoped to have the Jewish women marry Mitzrayim and to turn them into idolaters following their husband's religious beliefs. When it came to Lavan, the Lashon used by the Baal Haggadah, the Lavan bikesh la'kares hakol. Lavan wanted to destroy everything. How could he destroy everything? By turning Yaakov from the staunch monotheist, Oved Hashem Yeshev Oalem, into a tremendous idolater and believe in the idolatry and become a polytheist and literally wean him away from his religious beliefs. Not only would he destroy the ruchnius of him, he would destroy the ruchnius of his grandchildren as well and of his daughters, and literally destroy the future of Klal Yisrael by this type of inappropriate, crazy behavior, which quite obviously he was hoping he would be able to accomplish, having Yaakov under his specific dominion for a long, long period of time. This was the master plan. This is what exactly he wanted to do, what he wanted to accomplish. So the conspiracy of Esav and Lavan, and for that matter, Yishmael and all other anti-Semites throughout the generations, is we got to get rid of Yaakov and his superiority and the prophecy of superiority of Rav Yavot Sa'ir. And we have two ways of doing it. Either through physical destruction of Yaakov and his progeny, total genocide, or through the spiritual assimilation and acculturation of Yaakov and his progeny in the present and the future, literally converting them from being monotheists to polytheists, and by doing such, eliminate his spiritual legacy. God will take away his special supervision, and therefore the promises made to Yaakov and to Yitzchak and to Avram won't be fulfilled. Going back to the Bris Basarim, because of the spiritual Yerida of the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of this Mishkacha, assimilating, acculturating, intermarrying, and ultimately worshipping idolatry and worshipping the Gashmis, the materialism of the world in which we live. This has been the master plan of anti-Semitic nations throughout world and Jewish history itself. If you just take a look momentarily at two different nations that try to destroy us during Bayis Sheni, you have the Greeks, whose holiday we have, the Hanukkah holiday, and their defeat taking place in a couple of days from now. And then besides the Greeks, we have the Romans. But the methodology that was going to be applied by the Greeks and Romans to destroy the Jewish people were not identical. When it came to the Romans, there's no question they made Gezeiros Kashos against Judaism, against religion. They did whatever they possibly could to try to destroy the spiritual essence of the Jewish people by literally their physical annihilation. They can't study Torah. They can't observe Shabbos. They can't perform Bris Milah. They can't, quite obviously, do this mitzvah and that mitzvah. Can't wear tefillin. They were gozer on the performance of mitzvos and the teaching and learnings of the Torah. And they, to implement it, used the power of the sword, the Esav methodology, Achar B'chatichia, the power of the Roman Empire. They conquered the world through the sword, and they tried to destroy Klal Yisrael with their ultimate control of Eretz Yisrael during Bayis Sheni towards the end, destruction of the temple, later on destruction of Beitar. Their whole goal was to destroy us physically, annihilate us, as many millions of Jews that they could kill and commit genocide they tried to do, destroy us, our religion, and everything else. But it was the power of the sword, Esav's strategy, and that's why Malchus Edom and why the Romans are always connected to Esav and his philosophy. That was the Romans' way of dealing with the problem. When it came to the Greeks, at least initially, their theory was, let us try to entice the Jews to accept Hellenism that they should reject Judaism and accept Hellenism instead, which is a different form of idolatry, worshiping natural phenomenon in this world. And if that's the case, we'll make them Hellenist. They'll believe in the polytheistic gods of Greek culture. And slowly but surely, by having them intermarry and assimilate and acculturate, we'll make everybody Hellenist. They'll believe in the ideologies and hashkafas of the Greek Empire. And they will do to Klal Yisrael, attempted to do what Lavan tried to do to Yaakov and his wife and his children in the house of Lavan, to destroy us on a spiritual level. So in Bayis Sheni, you already see two different distinct approaches in the attempt to destroy us, either physically or spiritually, physically by the Romans, spiritually by the activities which were going to be performed by the Greeks. And that's why Hanukkah was such a great, important Yom Tov for us, because we eradicated the Hellenist ideology from the Jewish people. We killed the Hellenists. We defeated the Greek army, as the Gemara records in Masechtas Shabbos. It was a tremendous nice. Our temple, which they turned into an idolatrous temple, we cleaned out all the idolatry. Brand new Mizbeach, brand new Menorah, brand new Kelim, which were used for idolatrous purposes. We got rid of them. Had to rededicate the Beis Hamikdash. Hanukkah word chinuch, a re-establishment, a repurification of the Makom Hamikdash. It no longer was going to be an idolatrous temple as the Hellenists and the Greeks did. It's going to become once again a Makom of Tahara, the Kedusha, of the Tahara, of the Torah, represented by the menorah, the light of the menorah. Kinei mitzvah, the Torah, are being relit in Kedusha of the Tahara. So if that's the case, we therefore see in world history, just in Bayis Sheni, two different approaches by two major empires attempting to destroy us. The fact of the matter is, when you'll see next week's parsha, is that when the Malach attempted to have that wrestling match with, ultimately speaking, with Yaakov Avinu, and the Torah tells us that this was a wrestling match. And ultimately speaking, when you read the parsha for next week, what happened in that wrestling match is recorded by the Torah itself. And that is ultimately Yaakov, in many respects, defeated the attempts of the Malach to destroy him. The Malach told Yaakov, I'm going to be changing your name from Yaakov and elevating your name to Yisrael. Kisarisa imalakim v'anoshem v'atucha. Because you've demonstrated your ability to fight and to try to overcome what angels try to do against you. After all, the Malach was the Malach of Esav. And all idolaters and anti-Semites, you fought and strove with godly entities, with angels, with Anoshim, with human beings, with an Esav, with a Lavan, Vatuchal, and you succeeded to overcome them. Nevertheless, the Torah tells us that even though Yaakov succeeded, the problem is that he was injured. By this specific Malach, he was momentarily crippled on a certain way, he was limping. That's where the Isa Gitanosha, which was touched by the Malach and was injured momentarily, made him limp. And ultimately speaking, finally, at a later period of time, he was healed, and that limp was taken away, and he recovered. Now what's interesting midrashically is that on this Pegisha, between Yaakov Avinu and the Malach, we find two different Midrashi Chazal explaining what the striving with the Malach is being a nevuah for him about certain things that Yaakov and his children are going to encounter. The Malach of Esav representing the non-Jewish anti-Semitic world, Yaakov the ideal Jew in this world, and the wounding of Yaakov shows that on a certain level, the anti-Semites will get away with their anti-Semitism for a certain period of time, but they will not succeed in the destruction of Yaakov or the Jewish people. Now, one Medrash says, what does it mean that he wounded momentarily? So one Medrash says this refers to the gezeiros of Shemad, of anti-Semitism that will be promulgated in later generations against the Jewish people throughout the world and Jewish history. The wounding of Yaakov represents some people, unfortunately, will fall for this, will give up, assimilate, acculturate, give up Torah and mitzvos, intermarry. So there's going to be a limping, a weakness in Klal Yisrael in certain generations because of these spiritual, physical threats against our existence. This anti-Semitic gezeiros, Jews will be killed, al kiddush Hashem, because they won't want to give in. Some will basically assimilate and acculturate. So that's one Medrash interpretation of the encounter between the Malach and Yaakov. The other interpretation is that the Malach represented those Maluchos, like Greece and other countries, who tried to kill us through assimilation, acculturation, intermarriage and such. The limping of Yaakov represented that some people will fall for it. They will assimilate, acculturate, to try to avoid anti-Semitism, intermarry, and think that their problems have been resolved. That wounding of Yaakov therefore represented the accomplishment of who knows how many Jews will assimilate, acculturate, and intermarry to try to lose their Jewish identity, they think, and get rid of the anti-Semitism against them. But you therefore have the approach of Greece and the approach of Rome, Merumiz in Midrashim, in the fight that Yaakov had with the Malach. But the Malach says, despite the attempts of trying to get rid of you and your progeny, your name is going to be Yisrael, not just Yaakov. Kisarisa l'makim v'anoshim v'atuchal. You were able to counter angels who were trying to get rid of you. You were able to counter human beings who are trying to get rid of you. V'atuchal, at the end you will succeed, and you will ultimately end up Yaakov and Yisrael, especially B'nai Yisrael. Yisrael stands for Yashua Simkel, being connected to HaKadosh Baruch on a very high spiritual plane, emulating Hashem, being of Ar Lagoyim, being Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, not only by dying for the cause, but living for the cause, as I explained in previous Shiurim. You're going to be the Yisrael that ultimately supersedes, and at the end will succeed, as the Nevuah was given to Rivki Menu, that even though there's going to be tremendous tension between you and the anti-Semites of society, Rav Yavatsur, at the end, the Rav, the other nations who emanated from an Esav, who emanated from a Yishmael, who emanated from a Lavan, they won't succeed. You will succeed. Vatuchal, therefore, is an affirmation of that specific Nevuah given to Rivka, V'rav Yavait Sa'ir. And if you look in Jewish history, this is exactly an overview of what we experienced for thousands of years at the hands of the anti-Semites who've tried all different ways possible to try to get rid of us. What is interesting to note that when it comes to our Pashas Vayetze this week, is that the Torah tells us that Lavan tried as much as he possibly could to keep Yaakov in his house as long as possible, to do what he could to get rid of him. There was even a possibility that Lavan would change his tactics to try to kill Yaakov. Hashem appeared to him in a dream and told him, do not touch this man, or else you will be finished. And that's why Lavan never ever carried out the threat of perhaps killing him rather than converting him or assimilating him. But nevertheless, what we do see over here is that the confrontation of Lavan and Yishmael also, who is depicted in the Torah as a very violent person. And the Torah talks about the Nevuahs of who, in fact, this Yishmael is going to be. The Torah does not beat around the bush, but the Torah says when it comes to Yishmael, you're going to have a lot of nations emanating from you. And he then says the following, He'll be a wild person in all his aspects. You'll be continuously conflicting with other members of the world at large. And you are going to be a threat to yourself, a threat to the world. You're going to be a violent personality as well, which we don't have to go too far in world history. Just go back into our own time and look at the threat of the world when it comes to the crazy ISIS radicals or the crazy Iranian radicals, Hezbollah. Just go down the list of all the crazy Arabs on the face of this earth that like to use the sword and the knife and bombs, even human bombs, to blow themselves up and to kill other people. The Chafetz Chaim used to say upon the Arab world, which Rabbi Shaul Mishmori represents, he's called a Pera Adam. So the Chafetz Chaim used to say, usually the noun is basically succeeded in Hebrew by the adjective. So it should have said, Huye Adam Pera. Why did the Torah reverse and say, Huye Pera Adam? To tell us that Yishmael was such a strange personality, he might look like he's educated, he might look like he has a doctorate, might become a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, some type of super professional, a scientist, and might look like an Adam, but deep down he's a para, a wild, crazy animal of a man, and therefore we know for a fact that when it came to suicide bombers, they didn't just enlist people who are literally ignorant, uneducated, and losers. There were prominent doctors and scientists and lawyers who put on bombs to not only kill the Jews, but to kill themselves in the course of this action as well. And unfortunately, that's an ideology which the Quran and the radical Arabs basically articulate. ISIS believed in this. Hamas believes in this. They don't believe they have life in this world, the life is in the next world, based upon false promises which are preached to them by their preachers. But the fact of the matter is they are a violent group and a threat to humanity. And the fact of the matter is, in that respect, when Esav married into Yishmael's mishpacha and took wives, you had the combination and the forging of a relationship between the Bnei Esav and the Bnei Yishmael, Edom and the Arab world, both working together to destroy the Jewish people. In our historical period of time, you see it during World War II. The conspiracy between the Mufti of Jerusalem, representing the Arab world, and the German Empire, representing the concept and the Yesodos of, quite obviously, of Esav and Edom, coming together with the joint purpose of trying to figure out how to destroy the Jewish people, the merging of Esav and Yishmael of the Arab world and the Edom Empire to try to get rid of the Jewish people. And this conspiracy is known. The Mufti urged Hitler, Yimach Shemam v'zichram, to destroy the Jews as much as he possibly can. He wanted to help him as well. So these nevuos are not theoretical nevuos. These are nevuos which we experienced, which we unfortunately had to undergo, and as a result, quite obviously, who knows how many millions and millions of Jews over the centuries were destroyed because of this anti-Semitic behavior and activity of the Yishmaels of society and the Aces of society and the Lovins of society. We still see the ramifications of this to this very day. That's why Rav Soloveitchik used to say, B'Torah's Kabbalah, going back to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the mitzvah Timcha Zecha Malach not only refers to Amalek, which is more related to Esav than it was to any other ethnic group, including the Arabs. Rav Soloveitchik had a Kabbalah, going back to Rav Chaim, that any nation on the face of this earth that advocates the total genocide and destruction of the Jewish people, lock, stock, and barrel, anoshim v'noshim v'taf, if they're not a genealogical Amalek, there are an ideological Amalek, and the mitzvah, Timcha Amalek, applies to them, that you have to kill them and destroy them before they destroy you. You have to defend yourself. And Mocha Emcha, Hashem having to get rid of those Moluchos, which have such a fanatical, anti-Semitic flair to them, Hashem says, whatever you can't get rid of, I'll get rid of the ideology and the Hashkaf at the end of time. So there'll be a time of peace and Menucha. Anti-Semitism will be eliminated, Hashem says, but I'll have to accomplish that. You don't have the manpower to be able to do that, Klaus. You can defend yourself with your manpower, but to eradicate such a crazy ideology of Yad al Kesko, where they're fighting only you, they're fighting me, that Hashem says, my kisa will be shalom one day by me eradicating those ideologies from the face of this earth. So I want you to understand, therefore, what's happening to us in our generation is not a davar chadash. These prophecies were mentioned and explicitly stated in our Tanakh literature, in the Chumash literature. We should realize these nisyonos were mentioned, and quite obviously we should also see that we have, and watching how Yaakov dealt with it, and Yitzhak dealt with it, and Avram dealt with it, and later Tzadikim Vitzikanias throughout the generations dealt with it as well, how many people ultimately were willing to die al Kiddush Hashem when it came to not becoming Hellenists during Hanukkah. Chanu Banov, Chana and her children, they all committed suicide in order not to convert to the Hellenistic lifestyle. How many people died al Kiddush Hashem during the Roman Empire's threats? The Asara Harugim Malchus, which represented the elite of the spiritual Gedolei Yisrael, didn't want to give in. They kept teaching Torah publicly. Chanya ben Tzradion is a classical example. They found him teaching Torah publicly. They wrapped him in the Sefer Torah he was teaching from and burnt the Sefer Torah and him together. Him, Rabbi Kiva, and all the other great tzaddikim of Asarim Malchus died al Kiddush Shem Shemayim in order to show their stamina and their willingness to die for the cause, representing Avram's willing to be thrown in Ur Kasdim for the sake of being able to fight idolatry, Yitzhak and Yaakov fighting as much as they could, the anti-Semites of their generation, in every way they possibly could, risking their lives to do such, but so be it. That was their mandate. They were willing to die al Kiddush Hashem, but at the same point in time, as I mentioned last week and the week before that, they also lived a life of Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And that phenomenon of not only being willing to die for the cause, but to live for the cause, even if you have to do it secretly, but to live for the cause and be a Shemar Torah of Mitzvahs under the most incredible, difficult situation. When you read about the stories during the Holocaust, how many people secretly davened in those barracks, in those concentration camps, despite all the horrors that were taking place, people being killed, burnt, destroyed, they continued their munah bitachon and they prayed quietly. They lit the menorah quietly. Some of them had a seder quietly. They didn't want to give up. And those who were about to be killed, they ended up singing the Ani Mamon until the death took place. They're willing to live as a Jew, to die as a Jew, to maintain Yiddishkeit, has kept us going, and the promise of the Bris Bein HaBesarim is paramount when it comes to the Kiyum of Klal Yisrael and our ability at the end of Rav Yavot Zair. As we say, going back to the God again, despite the anti-Semites who wanted to kill us and those who wanted to lock us our coal, in every generation there are anti-Semites who incomprehensibly want to destroy us. Nevertheless, what does the paragraph say in the Haggadah? Hashem promised us in the Bris Bein HaBesarim that the non-Jewish world will never be able to accomplish this. As long as you have Jews who are willing to live and die al Kiddush Hashem and observe Torah v'mitzvahs, there won't be an ultimate Yerida Ruchanis of all of Klal Yisrael. A certain major segment will stay Maminim to the end. Therefore, there won't be a total Yerida Ruchanis. That will give us the schus that the brachos promised to us in the Bris Ben Hason will be fulfilled. Hashem says he's a Magen, the Klal Yisrael will be indestructible. That ultimately Klal Yisrael will be able to live when it comes to all the things we do in this world, militarily, politically, and otherwise. We'll get Eretz Israel as a Yerusha Nachla, whether the Goyim like it or not. And that ultimately speaking, we'll be able to see all the brachas, aksuvis, and are fulfilled in us when we're living in Eretz Israel, and we're turning to Eretz Israel with Kibbutz Galus and the coming of the Mashiach and the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kim of the Pasuk, of Hashem's supervision of the Jewish people, Ein Hashem Elokecha Lecha, may Reish Hashanah Achras Hashanah, the God watches the Jews and Eretz Israel from the beginning to the end of the year, a special divine supervision of us who are dedicated on every level in our dedication to Torah and Mitzvahs and our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The answer to anti-Semitism is not to give up and throw in the towel, and to convert, and to literally forget Torah v'mitzvos. The answer is not, quite obviously, to take your life and just forget about Torah v'mitzvos. The answer is to go forward and to realize that we have a bris ben habesorim haftacha that has kept us going, as the Gada says, for thousands upon thousands of years, and will keep us going and allow us to continue our Avedas Hashem despite all the hardships that are placed in front of us, that ultimately Klal Yisrael will become the Or LaGoyim Hashem wants. The Goyim will see the Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha V'Yoreh Mimecha, those promises of the brachos of the world looking upon us from a positive vein rather than a negative vein, will be fulfilled at the end of time, as being an Or LaGoyim on every level, spiritually, technologically as well. We will be an ultimate Kiddush Shem Shemayim for Hashem in this world. Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha, people will see us. That's a Jew. The Psukim in Tanakh and Midrashim talk about the Goyim at the end of time, realizing who we are and what we are, and them helping us fulfill our mission in this world in a friendly and a loving fashion. The Sukkim in Tanakh, we read a Sukkis of ultimately the Goyim giving up their Goyish temples and coming to our Beis HaMikdash at the end of time. Ki Beis HaBeis Tefili Kari L'chol HaAmim. All of this is within reach. We just have to maintain our stance in Torah v'mitzvos, follow Ma'aseh similar banim as is depicted in the Chumash, and realize the promise Rav Yavod Tzair, that all the older populations and older brothers will no longer be able to have power over us on any level, and Rav Yavod Tzair, the younger one, Yaakov and Klaus, will survive. Vasarisim Anoshim Elokim Vatuchal, we will overcome, the limp will be healed, and Klaus will come Shalem on every level as we come to Mois HaMashiach. Thank you for listening to me. This is the blueprint of our existence. We know what we have to do. Be involved in Torah v'mitzvahs, Torah v'chesed. You want to be netzol from Chevel HaMashiach to be involved in Torah Yasek b'Torah Mils Chasodim. Aves Yisrael, Aves HaBriyos. And Hashem will do the rest to give us the power, Sholei B'Derech HaTeva, to overcome and to succeed in our mission.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.